Hello, everybody out there. Today, I'm going to scar you for life. We do that already. Let's do it again. Let's go. All right, everybody. Hope you guys had a nice week. It is almost Friday here, so that is awesome. Hope you guys have some fun plans going out. It is finally nice-ish over here, I say as I look out the window. But, you know, it is still January, so got a month or two until we get back to the nice weather. And if you guys heard the introduction, we're going to, unfortunately, scar you again, because that's just what we do here, right? But we cannot do this scarring alone. We must get our friends to help us, because they are as much at fault as we are. So, all the way from his fandom in Utah, we got Garrett. Say hello.
How's it going?
And I guess I should kind of say Happy New Year, though I think we did one right before New Year's. So happy official New Year now.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Happy official New Year.
So we will go over what's going on, but anything interesting happening so far in January? You're just kind of doing each day as it goes.
Basically, yeah. 2020, yeah, we're here.
So I gotta say, I woke up and I felt like it was just another Wednesday.
Yeah. Does yeah. Basically.
But hey, we made it. It's 2020. Earth has not exploded, so we're good.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah. Now. All right, so if you guys have been listening, I've been doing a lot of throwbacks because, you know, I like to relive my childhood, and unfortunately my childhood looks a lot creepier now that I'm older. Maybe just me, though. I think you kind of agree with me, too. So, we're going to jump back a little farther, though, than when we were born, at least when I was born. We're going to jump back to the 70s and start off a series talking about some interesting, I guess is the polite way to say it, shows that were made for children. Now, keeping in mind, a lot of the info probably is vague or non-existent, considering some of these shows weren't, you know, saved. But nevertheless, we will find ways to disturb us because that's just what kids' shows do, right? Okay, so let's jump into our first one. And this one, and I did do some research on these, but as I did some research, I vaguely remembered some of these from, you know, my parents talking about it as well. The first one is called The New Zoo Review, because who doesn't like to rhyme multiple times in one sentence?
Yeah.
This show ran from 72 to 77 and was similar to shows such as Romper Room and Captain Kangaroo. Now, I know Captain Kangaroo, I don't know if you remember that character or not, but Captain Kangaroo definitely strikes a chord as being similarly done to, let's say, Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. This show, pardon me, was similar to that too. Basically talking about, you know, being a good person. It had 196 episodes. It was defined as a musical comedy, whatever the hell that means. And it discussed topics such as moving away, courtesy, bragging, and patience. You know, it doesn't seem that odd, right? The problem is, though, when you watch these videos, like I think you went on YouTube and checks them out, it's just weird, right? Like, it's weird. I don't know. I mean, I guess even Sesame Street is weird, but this was like,
Yeah, they're weird. They're weird.
I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
No, it's funny you brought up Sesame Street because it seems like a lot of these are, these three anyway, are kind of Sesame Street wannabe ripoffs.
But done the total opposite way.
yeah, not the fun way with Elmo and Cookie Monster and Count, but just weird. Like somebody took too many mushrooms while they were writing this show.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking right there. So that being said, this show, like Sesame Street, was done with humans and sometimes life-size puppets, sometimes small puppets. Right there is already problematic. And trust me, I know you guys are listening right now, but go check out a YouTube episode. It might not sound weird, but trust me, It is. So three of the main puppets we had were Freddy the Frog, Henry the Hippo, and Charlie the Owl. There you go. Oddly enough, though, even as weird as this was, it did actually get some rewards from the National Education Association and the National School Board Association. I say that's great, except for the fact that back in this time frame, at least in my opinion, there really wasn't a lot of other stuff other than these educational shows. So saying that you won an educational award is basically saying you're every other show out there. Am I a little off on that? Or, you know, does it seem like kid shows at that time were generally doing the same thing?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Kind of does seem like that. yeah, I don't know. Puppets were the thing, I guess. I don't know. It's freaking, it's weird.
It is, it is. It is. So even though the show seemed to kind of fade away at the in the 80s, repeats were on for another decade until the 1990s. Of course, it was taken over by an entertainment company. And to my knowledge, at least from what I'm researching, you can pick up DVDs and merchandise. I say now that we're in 2020, even, you know, if we never did this last year, it may be a little difficult because I don't know how long a lot of this stuff stays up for sale. Mm-hmm. But being, and I talked about this with somebody yesterday, being that everybody wants to make money, I wouldn't be surprised if we went on eBay or Amazon, typed this in, and found a DVD. Yeah. Because I'm sure somebody somewhere wants to keep this alive.
For some reason, yeah.
For some reason. Okay, so we listed a couple of the characters. We have the Frog, the Owl, the Hippo. We had we have some humans named Doug, Emmy Joe, Mr. Dingle, and Mr. Goodbody. Funny enough, a lot of the actors actually were from other things or ended up doing other shows. One big name that I found interesting was Chuck Woolery, who you guys all might know from the original Wheel of Fortune. He was the first host. Mm. Since Wheel of Fortune, he's done multiple game shows, so he's made more of a name for himself in the game show district than this. But this is a Sesame Street thing right here. You take people that may have not been huge at the time, or maybe were, and now they're even more huge because they're doing so many things, or were doing so many things.
Okay.
Just throwing that out there. I mean, yeah, I know it's a little odd. But again, some of the guest stars we had. We had somebody who was from Gilligan's Island. We had the original Maytag repair guy. We had somebody from Lassie, Lost in Space, the running man. The original guy who hosted Family Feud. So as weird as this was, this might have been where Sesame Street got the idea, maybe. And along with puppets and people, they decided, let's get some big names. What do you think?
I don't know. Were they big names back then? Like, are they kind of maybe mediocre starting to be big names? I don't know.
It's weird now because we know them, like, you know, like I know them bigger now. Obviously, since we weren't alive at the time, it's hard to say otherwise. But like, for instance, I'm looking up Chuck Woolery. He started Wheel of Fortune in 75. Yeah. This show ended in 77. So in a way, you could say he was already big. Some of the guest stars, like the people who are in Lassie and Hogan's Heroes, Lost in Space, they were already in these big shows, so I guess they were already big as well, but it also depends on your definition of popularity. Gilligan's Island is probably the one show that everybody knows. Well, okay, Lassie too. So anybody on those shows, I guess, is big name star.
True.
But I don't know. I guess it's a opinion thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like saying now, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, we've been watching Jeopardy at home here a lot. Like, Alex Trebek, to me, always been a big name. But looking back, was he only big for Jeopardy, or was he big before that for something else? You know what I mean? So I think it's also a personal preference, maybe.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
That makes sense, kind of, or?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, okay, so after that, it turns out the creator, who actually was one of the main characters, Doug, Mumray, who played Doug in the show, he now owns a production company that does commercials, PSAs, and training films. So obviously he's gone very far with his career there. But he, in 2001, became the vice president of said production company called Laguna Productions and was developing a new PBS show at the time called The New Crusaders. So obviously, as LSD as the show was, this guy did something right. Maybe it's the puppets. Maybe it's the fact that the puppets looked really creepy. Or maybe it was just a new idea. Or maybe just because it was the 70s. I don't know. What specific aspect for you do you think made it the worst or the creepiest? And you can't say all because that doesn't. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know, the like with the with Sesame Street, for instance, like the monsters and the Muppets, they're weird looking, but they all like they're not super weird to where you wouldn't want to, like, as a kid, you wouldn't want to, like, have one sitting on your bed. You know what I mean? Like, you would, I can't remember. I had one of them. I might have been Cookie Monster. I had a Cookie Monster stuffed animal as a kid, and I love the thing. But these other things from these other shows, like, they're kind of terror-inducing. And I don't know if, as a kid back then, I would have liked them or if I would have been scarred for life. I don't know.
Well, I will put it this way. If you look up toys on Google, you will have nightmares.
Like, well, I'll take your word for it then.
Like, legit. All right. So if you guys want to learn more on the show, obviously IMDb and TV.com are the best ways to go. But I definitely recommend going on YouTube, check out some episodes. You will definitely understand what we're talking about. And please, when you do, come back to the episode, comment, let us know exactly why you think this was terror-inducing, as my buddy here just said. all right, so moving on from puppets, what's worse than puppets? How about full-grown people acting like children? I don't know why this idea was great. I mean, it's like Blue's Clues all over again, at least Blue's Clues for us. This show was called The Magic Garden. And it was live action again, but no puppets, just really older people pretending to be children. Now, they use the word psychedelic. I'm going to use that word in a very different way because the plot or the summary were basically the two main women named Carol and Paula were singing several songs accompanied by one of them on the guitar. It takes place in their magic garden that includes the magic tree. I'm going to stop myself right there because I don't know if I can go through this whole thing. again, it was a different time period. And I know there was a lot of more okay with being kind of free and open and, you know, drugs was not a really big deal necessarily. This is not giving the right idea to a child, though, right?
No. The writers of this were definitely high on something in their own magic garden.
and again, this is no offense to the time period, but it seemed very LSD-ish, like you know,
yeah,
mushrooms galore. They were
definitely growing something from a magic garden.
And apparently the two women were taking those magic mushroom from the magic trees because they were way too happy to be what they were doing. And it even actually says it lowers objects from its various branches. So the tree was alive because why wouldn't it be? So we had some, you know, they sat on their garden swings. We had some giggling flowers. We had a little squirrel that would visit them named Sherlock. Because why not? And a bird named Flapper. So again, just like, you know, News Do Review, like we talked about, and Sesame Street that we've been bringing up, it was supposed to be a learning experience, right? You're supposed to teach, you know, kids how to be good people. What differentiates, though, that I learned through my research, this was kind of a beginning into what became religious programming for children. And maybe not just for children. They use some examples, like, for instance, the 700 Club, which I'm sure everybody has heard of at this point. So let's stop on that for a moment. Obviously, there's no problem with using religion in there. Do you think they got away with it because it was so far out, no pun intended? Or do you think it was a little too, you know, I don't even know how to finish that sentence.
They might have gotten away with the weirdness by throwing in these different religious and educational aspects to the show.
Right.
I just don't understand. Like, if you're going to pitch a religious educational show, how do you get away with, you know, using some clear and obvious drug references in your stuff? I don't get it.
Well, it's kind of the same way how even Sesame Street is kind of guilty of this. Of you teach them things, but the visual aids being used don't correctly describe that.
True. Yeah.
The other day I was talking about the cartoon All-Stars. I don't know if you remember that. It was the PSA about don't take drugs, but it was all the cartoon characters in the world coming together.
Okay. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it makes you want to take drugs because you're like, cool, if I take drugs, I get to go hang with Mickey Mouse and Winnie the Pooh. Like, it didn't give you the right idea because it didn't know how to deal or didn't know how to explain it correctly. Like,
right. Yeah. Makes sense.
So, you know, the two women who met in high school, they became teachers. They helped develop the show, obviously. They're the two main ones. Names are Carol DeMoss and Paula Janis. They threw around, you know, obviously they threw out ideas. DeMoss, who apparently has worked on stage, so her background before this was Broadway. She was invited to the station, you know, during the audition. She suggested another way of going about it, and apparently this is what they ended up with. You know, again, I have no problem with people making their own shows and making their ideas. And again, we're not 70s kids. We don't know. But, I mean, even today, the references in TV shows and stuff, I mean, has nobody learned drug references and weird stuff? You don't put that in children's stuff. Like, why? Is, you know, somebody said it was because, like, parents are watching. I'm like, I don't think parents want to hear that either. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So they ended up getting one of the original Muppet puppeteers, actually, to help with some of the creatures on the show. And, you know, it debuted. It lasted, what do we say, from 72 to 84, so a little into the, actually a year before I was born, there you go. So, you know, I guess it worked. It's just, I think the creepy factor for me really is the fact that it was like two full grown women playing in the schoolyard like children. It's not right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I don't know. It's kind of hard to pull off. There was the show, Big Comfy Couch, where there was an adult, but she acted kind of like a child doll, and but she was dressed up like a doll.
That's disturbing.
It worked more, I think, than this would have. It was a weird show as well, but I don't know. Definitely wasn't as like psychedelic as this one looks, for sure.
And it looks like the two of them are actually still good friends. They're actually still promoting the show, the Magic Garden. And they're actually trying to work with the station to try to get some collections put together. Maybe to sell, maybe to share. I don't know.
Hopefully not to revive. That would be awful.
Yeah. You know, after all these times, you get a little older. Okay. So, if you guys do want to learn more, if you go to carolandpaula.com, it has all of their lovely information on the website. Shout out to the two of them. And again, I'm not putting them down. I give these guys credit for making a TV show in the 70s or any time for that matter. So it's great that they made a show. It just, unfortunately, as we agree, adults acting like children, or in that case of the other show, dressing up like a doll, they got some problems.
Yeah.
It looked like there was a video interview of the two of them from 2010, but it has thus been taken down. If anybody has seen it or heard of it, let me know. I'd be interested to see what they talk about 2010, because that's only 10 years ago now. So we will see. All right, so jumping from one channel to another, and, you know, this is where I get shocked, because this channel is a big channel, right? This is not a weird channel. Nickelodeon apparently jumped in on the fun of having some creepy-ass shows with Pinwheel. The difference here, though, is Pinwheel actually was a big-time show, apparently, up to the par of Sesame Street, and I guess was looked upon very highly by a lot of people. Unfortunately, unlike Sesame Street and like New Zoo Review, we had some issues with visual. It premiered in 1977, and it aired all the way actually through 1990 on reruns. So I don't believe it was all new episodes, but at least it actually made a pretty big dent in Nickelodeon's history there. I think what happened was when we got Nick Jr., you know, that channel, Nick Jr., they started putting more new cartoons on it. That's when we lost Pinwheel and old stuff, because they were trying to get with the times. There was a total of 260 episodes from 77 to 84. It remains the longest running show, and was the longest running until the show You Can't Do That on Television broke its record. Now it's behind all that. You Can't Do That on Television, Nick News, Rugrats, SpongeBob, and The Fairly Odd Parents. So it tells you what happens to a show, but it also tells you that number 7, it's still up there. Shocker or not shocker?
Oh, not so much, because this, I mean, out of the three that we talked about today, this one seemed most like Sesame Street. Like it was, I mean, it's definitely not on Sesame Street's level, but I don't want to see it's the least creepy of the three, but it definitely had more of that Sesame Street feel. So I'll just leave it at that.
That's fair. That's fair enough. So the premise, as you just said, was similar basically to Sesame Street: live action skits. It had some cartoons. It had some small segments with human and puppet actors. But as you also pointed out as well, it didn't make the cut as far as appropriate puppets that don't really scare us. Not to say that if you see Big Bird in the middle of the night, that wouldn't scare the crap out of me, but I'd much rather see Big Bird than some of these weird-ass creatures, which we're going to get into in a minute. So we had a few humans. We had Kim, Sal, Jake, Francie, and Coco. Those were the main people who lived in and around the Pinwheel house. And then we had some puppets. We had Aurelia, which was a bohemian-style character. We had Plus and Minus, which were two boys who were complete opposites. We had Silas the Snail, who, you guessed it, was an elderly snail, who apparently never managed to get anywhere throughout the entire series. I don't know. We had Ebenezer T. Squint, a grumpy old man who lived in the boarding house. We had Luigi O'Brien, my guess would be an Italian-American produce vendor. Molly McMole, a mole that lived in a tree. We had Herbert and Lulu, the hobo bugs, because that's appropriate to say, right? We had Admiral Byrd, who apparently was never really in the show. We had Tika, Gorkel, and Woofle, three bird-like marionettes who lived on the planet Zintar and lived in a terrarium. And finally, another green and blue alien named Sorbin, who also was from the planet Zintar. I give them credit for creativity. What I don't give them credit for is weird-ass backstories.
Yeah.
Is there a point, you know, and I don't know, again, looking at it from an adult point of view, I don't get it. Was there a point of having backstories as a kid, do you think? Does it make understanding for the child?
Not necessarily. I mean, going back to Sesame Street, we never understood or knew why Count obsessively counts. or why Cookie Monster loves cookies. Why, that's just...
We can make some jokes there, but we won't, so we'll go.
We didn't know that kind of stuff, and we didn't, I frankly don't care. Like, that's just who they are, and that's why they're lovable, so, yeah. So I don't need their backstory.
Okay, yeah, that's fair, and, you know, maybe it would make sense to look at it. I don't know. I think I kind of agree with you that the less we know, maybe the better it is.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? If we knew why Count counts, it might give us a little more of a creep factor. Who knows?
That's true. Maybe it's good that we don't know, because then maybe Sesame Street will end up being on this list at some point.
Yeah.
So along with the live action sequences that basically taught kids, as we noticed the theme here, how to be a better person, it had a little bit of some shorts, cartoons, little puppets, whatever, which ended up being a theme in other shows, such as, I don't remember, Kablam. Mm-hmm. That was one of Nick's shows where it basically was a bunch of cartoons put together in a half an hour show. What I did find interesting, though, is that we had some characters that actually are famous characters, Curious George and Paddington Bear. So right there, we actually got some big time names, so to speak, in this show. Again, I think the least creepy of this all, because most of them were animated, were these shorts. Because they were cartoons. Yes, I have a list that I'm putting together of creepy cartoons, but for this case, these were general cartoons as we kind of remember them, I think. Mm-hmm. Only difference is maybe it was black and white, maybe it was a little more kind of rigid, but it was more or less a cartoon, right? It wasn't too much else. But that being said, and I think you said at the beginning, it's the least creepy, but still creepy. There's just something about these shows that just gives you that weird uncanny feeling. I believe there's a term called the uncanny valley or something, which is basically the place you don't want to go to, and that's where all these things live. So that being said, I think the one thing we can come to is nothing beats Sesame Street.
Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah,
that's for sure.
We could definitely say that. We can come to that conclusion.
That's for sure. There you go. So if you guys want to read more, again, as we noticed the other ones, you can check out IMDb and TV.com. And as always, go check out YouTube and go see these episodes as well. All right, guys. So that is going to wrap it up for our part one of weird. I don't know what we're going to call this. Weird, creepy, insane, weird. Weirdness, I don't know, from the 70s. Hopefully we'll get you back on for the remainder of the parts as well, because I feel like this is going to go on for a while. There's enough shows to last us till we die, probably. And to make it fair for everybody, we're going to make some episodes on the 80s and 90s as well, so stay tuned for that. Before we sign off, though, what do you guys have planned for January over on your end?
So we're going to be talking about... we do the Marvel Minute with you, and it's been a while since we talked about the DC side of things. So I've got a guy, my buddy, that guy Ralph, who we're going to be talking about DC and what they've got coming up for the year of 2020, and some of the rumors that have been floating around with them. So
very cool. All right, and of course on my end, we got two episodes out every Monday. We got some live events coming up. We got a bunch of cool shit happening. So stay tuned, stick around, and as always, stay nerdy.